What is up, you barefoot brothers? Welcome to No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bullier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. We are back this week with our monthly wild card episode, where all we need to do is be better than nothing. So while we'd like this episode to be good, we have set the bar at but so-so. For this month's wild card, as you may have noticed, there are two episodes coming out simultaneously today because we kind of punted on last week because we were in a coma after performing 14 hours of Shakespeare as we performed Richard II, Henry IV Part 1, Henry IV Part 2, Henry V, Henry VI Part 1, Henry VI Part 2, Henry VI Part 3, and Richard III over the course of 14 hours on June 12th, and we were exhausted.
To put it mildly.
So today on our wildcard episode, we are going to be reviewing three things each that we learned by watching these eight history plays in a row.
Here we go.
All right, Dan, so why don't you take the honors with the first thing that you learned by doing this insane thing that we did.
Yes. So I will, I guess, start at the very beginning.
Should we give more context on what this day was, or are we assuming at this point that everybody knows?
I mean, I think you just caught it in the intro just there.
Okay.
We did Richard II through Richard III in order. All the cuts were cut down to about 60 to 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them came in around 60 to 70.
Mm-hmm.
We did this outside at Throwback Brewery in Northampton, New Hampshire, as part of the Shakespeareans Encore series.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to doing 14 hours of Shakespeare, there was also some fantastic Shakes beers that were brewed for us for the event involved.
And they were delicious. So yeah, Richard
absolutely incredible.
Richard II kicked off at 7 a.m. and Richard III died at 8:20 p.m. We were there all day. It was amazing and horrible in all amazing ways.
Yeah.
All right.
And
so
we had tackled the cuts prior for the past four months of working on cuts.
Yeah. And casting.
So spending a lot of time with these characters to have them all come together on one day was cathartic.
Yes.
And devastating and exhausting. And it was a lot of emotion involved.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot was learned, I think.
Yeah, so this episode is really our debrief on the day and also, quite frankly, a bit of a therapy session. So here we go. So Dan,
just a little bit,
now that we've covered that, what's one thing that you learned over the course of this 14-hour day?
Sure. One of the things that I think was most interesting that I kind of had a sense of prior to, but really saw it and really felt it by being in the plays, was just how much Richard II makes sense as sort of a dramatic foil to Henry V.
Mm-hmm.
And they're two characters that never meet.
Right.
But to see Richard II makes almost more sense in the scope of the four-play cycle, in that he is setting up, it's a polar attitude of what one king looks like, that you're gearing up from the very beginning for the arrival of Henry V, I think.
From the start of Richard II.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, to get that line with Bolingbroke, and that he's the connecting piece between Henry and Richard, and that those two kings are so drastically different.
Mm-hmm.
You get it if you see a production of Richard II on its own. You don't need to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something that really matters, or is that interesting. But to see it go straight through, I thought that really jumped out for me.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting how they mention Henry V at the end of Richard II, but you don't see him.
Right.
That Bolingbroke, Henry IV, at the end of Richard II, is like, has anybody seen my son? And it's like, yeah, he's getting hammered with that idiot Falstaff. And he's like, I got to tighten that kid up. It's
right.
Like such a like Marvel universe, like post-credits, like, oh, we're going to see Henry V soon. Nice.
Right.
But yeah, that is really interesting, and you know, to set up how different, yeah, exactly, how different, not only how different Richard II is from the man Henry V ends up being, but so different from Prince Hal that we see in the Henry the Fourth's.
Right, exactly. And it's interesting that it's in Henry the Fifth that you get so many of the references to the action of Richard the Second, which we kept in because of the day. But that's they don't talk about Richard II a lot in the Henry IVs, but in Henry V, all of a sudden that pops back up.
Yeah, in a weird way that like influenced Henry V.
Yeah,
Richard II's rule.
Correct. Yeah,
that's interesting. So, Dan, you played Henry V for this day.
I did.
So, how did you, as an actor, use that?
Or were you able to?
Or is it more of a fun footnote type of thing?
I think it's more of a fun footnote. I wasn't really thinking about it in the moment. I remember. In reflection, thinking about it and going, you know what? That made so much, it gives you so much to play with that you can look at things that Richard does and you can try to do, you know, call back.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I tried to play with was the way that we interacted with the throne, which for us was a keg.
Mm-hmm. Because we were at a brewery, so when in Rome, do as the Romans do.
And it was, you know, that keg discovery kind of happened, I think, in the middle of, it wasn't a planned thing. It happened in the middle of the performance. So all of a sudden there was this like, oh, we've all sat on the same seat.
Mm-hmm.
Or interacting with the crown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, we've all held this thing today.
Right, and the crown for the day was a throwback brewery growler. A big, awkward, you know.
Yeah.
Like a jug, basically.
And it was heavy.
It was heavy is the hand that bears the crown.
That's right.
So
that was one of the first things I think I took away from this.
All right. I think piggybacking off of that, to kind of tying into how different Henry V and Richard II are, I was fascinated in seeing them all lined up, how different the plays are from each other.
Yeah.
Based on who the king is. So, like, the tenor of the whole play is driven by the state of the king. So
yes.
In that, you know, Richard II, that whole play is them basically getting rid of this selfish king, right?
Right.
And Henry V is this story of the, you know, the conquering hero growing up and overcoming his, you know, like the boy that we watched him grow up and now he's grown into a hero.
Right.
And Henry IV is like someone fighting for what's right. You know, and maybe not, you know, especially the way he's dealing with his son. He's humanized by his relationship with his family. But
right.
Then when you get into the Henry VI, you have, you know, in Henry VI Part 1, there's basically no king. Because Henry VI is 8 or whatever. You know, he ascends the crown when he's 6 months old. And there's no center to that play. And then it ends, you know, and then when you have Henry VI evolving into being kind of a figure, being a not a very strong king. And then, of course, Richard III is a completely different tone than anything else.
Right.
But it's interesting that functionally all of these plays are about the same thing. They're about people at the top of the chain dealing with being king.
Right.
But the tone is so different as the characters change through, and really all they have in common is their pursuit of the crown. All these different characters are just united by this one pursuit. And it's really interesting.
Right, right, right. And then how they're changed once they've accomplished that pursuit.
Mm-hmm. And how they go about that pursuit, you know?
Yeah.
The way Bolingbroke becomes Henry IV is so different than the way, you know, Richard III becomes king.
Right.
Just the, you know, the machinations that these people take. And I think you see it in the characters, right? That the way Henry IV takes the throne, and he owns it, and then Henry V inherits it.
Yep, and he comments on that. He says, you know, this is a righteous king. My kingdom will be righteous because I'm receiving this from the right person.
Mm-hmm. But that does not pass off to Henry VI, who at one point is like, why did I have to be king? I wish I could have just been a farmer.
Right.
But ever since I was 6 months old, people made me do this, and I really would have been better just like chilling.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And it's interesting. Yeah, it's just really interesting how the plot is the same. This person is king, but the plays are so different. And it was really cool to see that in stark contrast with some of the same characters, like in the supporting roles going through. So I thought that was really cool. And it's something that, you know, no sane person will get to experience.
speaking of supporting characters, one of the things I think was a big takeaway for me was how sneaky good the character of Northumberland is in the early plays and then Suffolk in the later plays.
Yep.
Those two characters, you know, we had asked in the preview episode, which character would you want to play as a non-title character?
Yep.
And Hotspur was my answer then. Now, I mean, Northumberland's pretty appealing at this point. Too young for it, but it's a great, it's one of those roles. It's just like, wow. He goes through everything. And is just hanging around.
Just loitering.
I'm just happy to be here. Who's the king now? Yep, I'll be with you. It's, you know, so it's a, one of those, it's a really neat, neat character that I've never thought about. And I don't think you would, seeing these plays outside of all of them back to back, necessarily go like, oh, what's your dream role? Northumberland.
Yeah, like, right.
Okay.
Well, and then Suffolk, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just a Suffolk's a force.
Yeah.
And in a way that I didn't recognize, you know, all those scenes, again, inside of one play, I don't know that you really realize how great that role is. But when you get to see them all stacked up, and kudos to the actors that played both of those roles.
Absolutely.
For bringing it, like really bringing it. And it's hard to sustain that over the course of four and a half hours.
When you're there at 6:30 a.m., yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, kudos. I mean, just kudos to everyone. How many actors did we end up? Was it 50-some-odd actors that we ended up having that day?
In that ballpark.
Yeah. So, you know, if any of them are listening, just thanks to everyone who made this insane project possible.
Yeah.
You know, the talent that we were able to pull in is what made it feasible and didn't make us want to kill ourselves, because it was an amazing event that we had amazing talent for.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you're thinking, you know what, this sounds awesome, we want to do this as another theater company, I will tell you that here's something else I learned. This is piggybacking on the Suffolk Northumberland point. If you do not have an ace to play Margaret, don't even try.
Absolutely. That was like the takeaway from the day. And I mean, we knew that was a great role before, but Deb Kinghorn, who played Margaret for us from 16 years old to 60 years old, was unbelievable.
It was unreal to watch.
And
it comes like in the, speaking of marathons, it comes in, she appears when the audience is pretty tired, when a lot of the actors are pretty tired, and just has to carry.
Just has to pick it right back up.
Yeah, and it's no light task.
No.
So
that's an interesting, I'm not prepared to answer that question now, but where you apply your aces on this day.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you need a lot of them.
You need a lot. You need a lot of aces. You need a lot of kings. You need a lot of queens, a couple of jacks.
Yeah.
You need some help.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, talking about when Margaret shows up, I think one of my takeaways from seeing all eight plays in a row is that Henry VI, Part 1, is the weakest link of these eight plays.
Well, it's, you're resetting.
Right.
You've already had four plays that were directly related to each other. And outside of a comment made in the epilogue, there's really no connection between Henry V and Henry VI, Part 1, directly. Like, it's a
reboot.
Starting a season.
Yeah.
You know, it's a new season. And you're like, okay, we're going to introduce new characters, start new storylines. Like, all the jokes or all the plot points that we set up at 7:30 in the morning have been paid off. Like, it's, you know, you're starting over.
But it's also, you know, when you look at the order that the plays were written, the Henry VI plays were the first three plays that Shakespeare wrote.
Right.
And the first one he wrote was our Part 2. So he wrote Henry VI Part 2.
Yep.
That ends on a cliffhanger. Then he wrote Henry VI Part 3. Everybody was like, this is awesome. And then he wrote Henry VI Part 1 as a prequel.
Right.
And it feels that way. And, you know, you have Joan of Arc in there, and it almost feels like Joan of Arc was just hot at the time. And he's like, yeah, let's get some Joan of Arc in here. And it's like, Joan of Arc has some good stuff, and there's some good stuff in there. But the whole play is just, oh, we took this land back from the French. Ah, the French got it back from us. Oh, we took this land from the French. Ah, the French got it back from us.
Right.
But because, you know, we were talking before about the king being the center of the stories.
Yep.
Because Henry VI in this play is between 6 months old and 10 years old, basically. He's just a kid. It's like this play in a sense, is a problem play because it's a play without a central character.
Oh, interesting.
You know, the problems facing England are that their king is a kid. So, right. You know, you have Suffolk jockeying for power, and you have Somerset jockeying for power, and you have York jockeying for power, and you have Margaret jockeying for power, and you have the French knocking at the door, and you have the Archbishop of Winchester, the Bishop of Winchester, the Cardinal of Winchester. All of these guys are like, I want to be the lead of this. I mean, they want to be the king, but also right. When you're watching, you're like, I want to be the lead of this play.
Huh.
And that void is a real challenge.
Right.
And I mean, again, just to say it, the production was great, you know, to yep. everybody that was in there was fantastic, but it's like you're fighting an uphill battle.
Absolutely.
With this play, which is, you know, it's now, you know, I can rate all the Rocky movies, but now I feel like I could go down the list and rate the history plays.
What does that look like?
Oh, that's an interesting. I knew it was the worst.
Yeah, well, you're going to stick you with that?
Richard III is the best one, so that's number one.
Okay.
Number eight is Henry VI, part one.
Okay.
Okay, so now there are how many other ones?
Six left. My math is correct.
Five, six, seven. I think Henry V is the next.
Okay.
The second best one. Henry VI Part 2 and Henry VI Part... it's hard because Henry VI Part 2 and 3...
Yeah.
And Henry IV Part 1 and 2... I'm sorry, Henry the... Yeah, Henry IV Part 1 and 2 are really like... Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows types of things where there's no... It's really one... It's just one really long play.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean?
They broke up into three movies so they can make more money.
Exactly. So... And Henry IV and Henry, those last two legs of Henry VI are both great in such different ways because in the Henry IV's, the comedy in those plays is better than it is in any of the rest of them.
Yeah.
You know, with Falstaff and Hal and Poins and like all that gang and Mr. Quickly and D'Altair, yeah. Like all those guys, there are no, the comedy goes away through the Henry VI. There aren't a lot of yucks, not a lot of goofs. And until you get to Richard III reveling and being what he is.
Right.
You don't have a lot of good times.
Well, it makes sense if you're looking at the timeline of Shakespeare writing it, that he wouldn't have had, you know, he didn't have Kemp being just an ace actor at that point. I'm not sure when he would have had Kemp.
Right.
But if he did have him, he wasn't the Will Kemp that he would be by the time he was playing Falstaff.
Right.
So there was no need to write that sort of comedic stuff.
And you didn't, right, you didn't have anyone to do it.
Plus, he's a younger writer, and right, comedy is harder to write than tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's hard to say between Henry IV, the two parts together, Henry VI, 2 and 3, and Richard II. Because Richard II is great, too. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know what those three are.
Okay. We can give that a thought and maybe tweet it out or come back to this on next week's episode.
All right, yeah. Other folks.
Add some banter.
Yeah, give us some, let us know what your opinions are.
Plead your case for your favorite
set
play.
Set the tone so we can try and figure out, we can make the definitive listing of the history plays.
Nice. I think it's that'd be an interesting venture to get the correct order here or the most... crowd-pleasing order?
I'm sure
that ours would be very different.
Figuring out... Yeah, probably. I mean, just figuring out what the consensus... Just figuring out what the consensus is for the order would be an interesting exercise.
Right. That'd be fun. Let's see how it works out.
Yeah.
One of the things, to speak directly to something I felt as opposed to an observation... I guess it is an observation, but it's an observation from the inside as opposed to from the outside, is... Coming into this, I was super pumped to get a chance to play Henry V.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a role that's always like, oh, someday maybe you get to play Henry V.
Mm-hmm.
And what I learned and discovered doing this that I was surprised by is that Hal is way more fun.
Sure.
To play the plays, the scenes are more interesting. Not just more fun, it's more rewarding too.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, Henry V is... Some of the, you know, those speeches are great and mm-hmm. it's really well put together, but it's not necessarily as interesting a character from an actor's point of view. Mm-hmm. It might be interesting from an audience, but just in terms of like all the scene to scene, the shifts, the scenes with Falstaff and the scenes with the king,
mm-hmm.
And it just seems like there's so much more there that I didn't realize. I think I got caught up in the Henry V propaganda.
Well, go ahead.
No, that's really it.
Well, in a weird way, right, when you're looking at over the course of a day rather than over the course of the production, his arc is really completed by the time he becomes the king, right?
Yeah.
Like his polar attitudes, his change is done. When he's the king, it's just his, you know, victory celebration of being super awesome at being king throughout Henry V.
Right.
And that may just be, I mean, I think that's obviously heightened by the fact that we slashed half of the plays. So it's like that arc gets simplified.
Right.
And, you know, if you're doing Henry, it's not to say that if you watch Henry V standing on its own, you're not going to see an arc from Henry V. But when you're looking at over the grand course of the day.
Right. It's, yeah, he's done. The pilot has begun his descent.
Yeah, right. We are, right. You know. Your tray tables in your upright and locked position by the time we get to Henry V.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, there was interesting.
There was a moment in one of the scenes in Henry IV part two, where the king had me, Monty Montgomery Sutton, who played Bolingbroke, mm-hmm. had me isolated from my beer. And I remember being like, talking to him afterwards and being like, well, you know, I think it's important that Henry's not reformed yet. Otherwise, what's the point of the rest of the play?
Mm-hmm.
And because the scene can be, I mean, on paper, he's a pretty good son in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to try to find a way to make it so that it wasn't like, oh, I've already made it. I've already
right,
cleaned
I'm
up
there.
My, you know?
Yeah.
And it was really, it was a fun moment to play and then to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a quick conversation that was basically, we'll talk more about this later. So, Monty, if you're listening, let's talk. I'm ready.
I think it's also good to say at this point that, yes, Dan did play Henry V, and I did play Richard III. But that is not generally our modus operandi for Seven Stages productions.
That is correct.
To put ourselves in titular roles. We just did it on this day because we needed someone who is definitely going to show up, and Dan and I are both pretty reliable at this point.
Right.
Also,
six months of work.
Yeah, exactly. That's our payoff that we get to play these roles.
it also, I recommend to everyone who does this, if you decide to do something like this, giving yourself a slot where you're done by noon is a great idea.
Yeah, that was a very wise decision on your as I was starting up Richard III at, you know, his arc halfway through Henry VI part two at, what was that, like 4 o'clock?
Yeah.
And you'd been done for 3 hours?
Yep.
Son of a bitch. You forgot this one out.
Got it again.
Just next, feel things. When we do this again next year, I'll take someone that's done earlier in the day.
Yeah, cool. Let me know who else you cast.
You're available for Richard II.
Oh, God. Perfect. Dreams. Done by eight? Even better.
At best. Yeah, and the last thing that I had, of course, is a Richard III discovery. And it's that Richard III is completely justified in everything he does in the text. So when we meet, until Richard III, when he's just Richard, is...
When he's Gloucester.
When he's... No, before he's Gloucester, when he's just Richard. Richard, son of York.
Okay, got it.
He is so team House of York. He is selfless. He is running around. He's saving his father. He's saving his brother. He's just kicking everybody up and down the field. He's doing awesome. And until his father dies, his father is tortured and killed. His brother is tortured and killed. And then his brother Edward, who's now the king that he's placed, screws up the alliance with France and extends the war because he marries Lady Grey when he has an envoy out to marry the Princess of France.
Hmm.
Richard doesn't scheme against his own side at all.
Interesting.
Until Edward screws everything up.
Hmm.
And it's after that scene that Richard's like, well, if nobody's going to take this seriously, then I guess I'm just going to do it.
Right.
So, yeah, again, just Richard, I guess my takeaway is that Richard III is amazing.
That's a takeaway.
And is the best. Yeah, I was on the fence before.
Sure.
And then
it certainly
also,
didn't seem that way, but that's fine.
Uh-huh. Also, I think it's interesting in doing Richard III all these plays in a row and seeing York, Richard, Edward, and Clarence's father
yeah.
evolve. It's clear how much Richard, how highly Richard thinks of his father.
Okay.
And when his father, you know, both in, you know, watching how York operates in the earlier plays, he's Richard. Like, Richard is his son more than the other. The other brothers are less like York than Richard is. You know what I mean?
Sure, absolutely.
And then, you know, seeing that, seeing how much like Richard York was, I started to see all the places where Richard III refers to his father in the other plays.
Interesting.
Which I never really noticed before, but he constantly is referring to his father, who is in heaven, absolutely.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And it's really interesting to see that, you know, that depth of character that can be played. That's, you know, the type of thing that when you're in production, you can find, certainly.
Yeah.
But having it evolve throughout the day as you have the script in hand, and you're like, oh, he's talking about his dad again.
Interesting.
He hasn't let this go. He's still talking about his dad.
Right.
It's really fascinating. It was really fascinating discovery. Yeah.
I think that gets back to the idea, you know, we talked a little bit about that these plays are about kings, sure, but they're really about the humans who are the king.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, lineage is going to make sense in terms of history plays.
Mm-hmm.
But to really look at, throughout the course of the day, fathers and sons is very compelling, especially when you think about Shakespeare and his relationship with his father.
Mm-hmm.
If these are his early plays, you know, you're saying Henry VI's are the first plays he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's so driven. One of the, you know, we don't know a lot about Shakespeare the man, but we know for certain that he was very driven by his relationship with his father.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's a cool observation.
Yeah, so it was really fun to play with.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, and I mean, I feel like we could have asked, we could have brought the mic, you know, if we had a microphone kit, we could have brought it out that day, and talked to any of these characters who, you know, we could have talked to. Monty, who played Henry IV. We could have talked to Deb, who played Margaret. We could have talked to Alex, who played
Suffolk.
We could have talked to CJ, who played York. All these characters that carry through, and these discoveries that, yeah, you can find in the text, but to be able to really do it and find it somewhat on the fly,
right,
was a fascinating experiment.
So maybe if you are listening and you were involved, please send us your discoveries.
Yeah, we can share them amazing.
As some banter.
Yeah, and if you're, and you know, like Dan said, if you have a company that you want to do this, we strongly encourage you to do it and invite us, and we'll show up at, 11 a.m., and we'll leave at like 4, and it'll be great. And
it'll be perfect.
Yeah, definitely.
That brings me to my last observation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we spent a ton of time working on these cuts, and Seven Stages Shakespeare Company, we are proud that all of our programming is free for all, or pay what you will.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you are a company looking to do Messenger Day or something like this, we now have 8 cuts for sale.
Oh, I taught you so well.
Yeah.
Cue the Million Dollar Man theme music.
We'll sell you 8 cuts and save you 6 months of your goddamned life.
And send over the casting grid all together. We can tell you who can double.
Yep.
We have the timings already.
Yep.
It'll be great.
All you'll have to do is go. You get to go back and put things back in that you want because our cuts are so tight.
So tight. Oh, my God.
So.
55-minute Henry V.
That's right. Well.
Speak the speech, I pray you, trippingly on the tongue.
Absolutely.
No
breaths till Brooklyn. Here we go.
You said breaths?
Breaths.
Got it. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
All right. You got anything else?
Oh, my God. No.
No. Hey, you know what, Dan? Congratulations to you. I know you. It literally took years off of your life, and you don't have that many to give to cast this thing.
I don't. Very precious few left.
I appreciate it. We all appreciate it. You did great work. Thank you.
Hey, this was your crazy idea back 3 years ago.
It was. So. And I couldn't be happier that it almost killed you, so we have that.
Thanks.
We'll
do it again next year.
I know.
I can't wait. I'm very excited. I'm excited to see your take on Joan.
I think I'll be great. I'm playing Margaret. Are you kidding me?
No. Remember that bit I said about having an ace for Margaret?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Deb Kinghorn is coming back. Deb, everyone else is... change everyone else.
All right, here's a curveball. If you could, what track would you pick if you did this again? If you wanted to play your Vanity Productions,
yep.
I'm the big dog, I get to play who I want. Who would you play the next time around?
Richard II. I'm done. 8:20.
No. But like, okay, yes. Practically, yes. But in terms of like the arc, like if you were actually going to, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think I would probably go with Suffolk.
Yeah.
I think Suffolk was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that would be the best choice.
Mm-hmm.
Just as someone who knows myself,
uh-huh.
Bringing me on at like 1 p.m., not a good idea. You got to get me done by noon. That's just in my rider.
You can sleep till noon. We'll just give you a place to sleep and then you can roll out.
I wouldn't want to miss the plays.
Well, you've already seen them now. You know what happens.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, really, who am I going to watch play Henry after I've enacted it?
Me.
God.
No, it's not for me. He's a face. I can't do that.
You just work the heel heat.
Hell yes. Absolutely.
Right. You'd be good Northumberland.
Mm.
Who would you want to play? Turn that question back around.
York.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's a great role.
Yeah. Just play that, you know, evolution of Richard, I guess. I'm
right.
Kind of
so you
of one track.
Still line. Play the same role. Without...
Yeah, exactly. Play it the same way, but then be proud of my son.
That's good. That's a good bit. Bolingbroke is also, I mean, come on.
I mean, that's a great one.
Maybe that's what we do next year. Vanity Production presents ourselves as ourselves playing our fathers.
Right? And just move up the ladder.
You know, well, we're 33, so.
Right. Richard II is actually a beautiful part, too.
That's what I said.
I know, but like you were just doing it because you want to be done.
No. I think it's a great role.
Yeah, it is a great role.
Huge shout out to Chrissy Penny.
Who
great job.
Absolutely nailed it in a way that no one should be able to nail a role that ends before 8 a.m.
Right.
Because
There was an amazing moment, one of those goosebump-inducing moments of in I Have Been Studying, where there's the line is, ha, music do I hear?
Mm.
And he took a pause, and then all of a sudden all the birds started singing.
Out of nowhere, yeah.
And it was like, we are blessed.
Yeah, right.
There are, thank you. Whoever's directing this piece, thank you. Thanks, Bill.
Right, upstairs.
Right.
For endorsing our insane thing. So... Yeah, that was our takeaway, our debrief from our insane marathon. Sorry, this one might have been a little more inside baseball than it usually is. Hopefully this is okay.
It is, but so-so.
It is, but that's all it had to be, is so-so. But yeah, it was an amazing day, and if you couldn't be there, that's your problem. So
that's right.
Tune in next time. Subscribe, rate, and review. Oh, you have anything else before we bring this thing home?
No.
Great, perfect. Please. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. And if you want to keep in touch until next time or send us your 1 through 8 listings of the history plays, you can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at noholdsbarredcast, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/noholdsbarredcast. So, on behalf of the insane people at the Seven Stages Shakespeare Company, my name is Kevin Condardo.
And I'm Dan Bollier. And this is in prose, so...
See you next year for Messenger Day 2, Revenge of Messenger Day.
If you want to be involved, we're casting starting next week, so let me know.